Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, as rule-breaking cyclists are making the headlines yet again, we're asking whether or not the police should be prosecuting them.
We've also got news of an 18-year-old who's breaking climbing records on famous Giro d'Italia mountains, the Formula One driver who's racing bikes under a pseudonym, and the historical road race that's at risk due to reduced local speed limits. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that pro cyclist James Knox has made history for becoming the first rider to be issued with a yellow card. This is a new rule that the UCI are trialling to make, or try to make, cycling safer.
Yeah, so according to Canadian Cycling Magazine, he was acting like a bit of a jerk towards a spectator, causing him to trip and fall. Apparently, James's director said the yellow card was justified.
I didn't read that bit.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the race where it happened, the Vuelta a España, also made history for being the first race to start inside a supermarket.
No words.
In the fruit and veg aisle, apparently. It's shaping up to be a bonkers race, by the way, isn't it? Worth tuning into for the remaining 2 weeks.
Any more interesting start venues?
Well, it can't get much more interesting than that, can it?
Well, I don't know.
Like the middle aisle.
Yeah, or the wine section, maybe?
Well, that could make for interesting racing, couldn't it? Anyway, we also learned that number 22 bicycle company from New York are the first to create a fully 3D printed titanium aero road bike. The Reactor.
Oh, yeah. Now, whether it is faster, lighter, and or stiffer than a carbon bike, we don't yet know. But, my goodness, that is a thing of beauty.
Oh, isn't it?
Oh,
I'm glad you agree.
Word, yeah.
That looked beautiful as well. No words on price just yet, but I'm braced for it to be megabucks.
What gives you the impression that a handmade 3D printed titanium aero bike would be expensive?
I've got no idea, really. I mean, maybe it'll be $299.99.
Maybe you find it. Maybe you can find that in the middle aisle as well. Now, I also learned this week that my fear of all cows, even the seemingly benign Alpine and Pyrenean cows that just hang out on the world's most iconic climbs, is truly justified. Look at this video, right? Cow strolls up, looking all nonchalant, then bam! Just knocks that guy off his bike out of nowhere. Shameless violence.
Well, maybe the cow felt that it was rude for that man to be just on his phone.
Well, maybe he did, but it doesn't justify it. And to be fair, I do actually admire that cyclist for carrying on his conversation as if nothing has happened. Anyway, thank you to Fiona Shorten for filming that one. Filming it midway through the hellish VIA race, which is a 4,000-kilometre route across Europe, following, I was reading, in the footsteps of Hannibal, the Carthaginian general who gave the Romans a tough time in 200 BC.
Crikey. That's a bit of unexpected history for you on the GCN show.
Well, indeed, yeah.
Incidentally, it's quite funny, isn't it, that if you become known for having a fear of cows, your fear becomes greater because people think, oh, that was... That's worth sending aside. That looked brutal. Let's just increase his fear a little bit longer.
Do you know what? I mean, I think there's something to be said for that, because it's almost like if you start developing fear of cycling on the roads, there's an awful lot of stuff out there that makes it look worse than it really is. And so, yeah, now I, yeah, I'm absolutely petrified. Well,
we actually rode together, didn't we, for almost an hour?
We did, yeah.
In the New Forest on Sunday morning.
That hour went so fast.
I almost dropped sight past the three cows that we went past. You took it rather slower than I did.
Well, I did, because you never know what they're going to do.
Unpredictable cows. Yeah. There's squirrels that are unpredictable. Anyway, we should probably get on to what we were chatting about at the coffee machine.
For the record, I am not scared of squirrels, all right?
I am. They go anywhere.
Well, I know. One nearly went in my front wheel yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, they're the most unpredictable animals on the planet. We must have mentioned this before. Every animal on the planet, if it sees you coming, generally either stays still or runs in the opposite direction. Squirrels can be in the opposite direction for a split second and then just suddenly decide, no, I'm going to go into the wheel.
Yeah.
And then back again. Anyway.
There are squirrels to spare, at least, and it's not likely to...
I reckon there's cows to spare.
Yeah, but the cow's going to do more damage than the squirrel, isn't it? That's what... Like, I'm not afraid of a squirrel.
Well, I mean, some people would argue there's cyclists to spare. Not cyclists, of course.
I was going to say.
We've deviated way off the coffee
machine. We really
machine
have,
challenge.
Yeah.
We'll really get onto that, otherwise this show's going to be 45 minutes long. Right, so we get to the coffee machine chat.
Let's get to the coffee machine chat, yeah.
Bumbling on a bit here. And unfortunately, cyclists breaking the rules is back in the headlines again, and that is what Si and I were discussing at said coffee machine earlier on today.
Indeed, yeah. Firstly, bit of a shout out to Phil Guyman, who released a video last week called LA Sheriff Gets Schooled by Pro Cyclist.
Former pro, surely.
Former pro yeah. cyclist, Phil. Anyway, as he tells it, Phil was out for a ride and got stopped by a police officer because he was riding side by side with his mate. And he was told that cycling two abreast is against the law.
Mm. Apparently it's not in California, is it?
Yeah.
So Guyman argued his case on the roadside first, then in court, and ultimately he won. Although his point is that simply being stopped by the police when doing nothing wrong is a loss in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I am in the privileged position of only being able to imagine what that must be like as a middle-aged white guy. But leaving aside that fact, the fact that this police officer was trying to find Guyman for something that is perfectly legal and therefore he wasn't doing his job properly, we thought it does beg the question, doesn't it, of whether or not the police should be trying to prosecute cyclists who do actually break the law.
It's complicated.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
So on the one hand, cyclists are responsible for such a small amount of injuries on the road that it simply isn't worth the time for police to try to enforce it. Not if you look objectively at the cost versus the benefit, at least.
Yeah. However, there are definitely cyclists out there who do either infrequently or routinely break the rules that they really shouldn't, like running red lights. And even if the risks to pedestrians and other cyclists are low from these infractions, the fact is they shouldn't be doing it. There is a risk, albeit small, and then perhaps most importantly of all, I think it pisses people off, doesn't it? And it makes them hate cyclists. And, you know, it's just a bit of a dick move, right?
It is, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are definitely times when the police should be stopping cyclists, I would say. Although, in the example I'm about to give, calling them a cyclist, I suppose, might be a little bit of a stretch.
Go on.
Because this was something that we spotted on Cycling Weekly's website, where basically a delivery driver, or rider, almost driver, was stopped somewhere near Preston in the north of England because they were riding on the M6 motorway.
The M6 motorway
in Preston.
For those of you not in the UK and therefore not familiar with our motorway network, the M6 is about as busy a highway as it is possible to get. And at times when it's not completely stationary with traffic, it's probably one of the fastest highways in the country as well. Not even motorbikes, unless they're over a certain engine side, are allowed on those motorways, let alone bikes.
Bicycles. If you can call this that. Yeah. Not even highly modified bicycles, because that's exactly what the case was here. Illegally modified, I should probably add. Now, worryingly, there have been a spate of these incidents on UK motorways over the past year or so. And with so many illegally modified e-bikes around now, you'd imagine it might well get worse before it gets better.
You know, a couple of weeks ago when you were away, I said that you had a bee in your bonnet about illegally modified e-bikes. And look, it's true.
Yeah, I have.
You definitely do.
Well, I just think they give all cyclists a banner. They're not cyclists at all.
No.
They don't pedal.
No.
Anyway.
Told you. Anyway, there was actually a cycling team, like an actual cycling team of cyclists that ended up riding on a British motorway as well, wasn't there?
They were.
In Scotland.
Well, yeah, it was in the same Cycling Weekly article, actually.
Was it?
So you're right, it was in Scotland. I was reminded of this through that article. Sri Lankan team, they were one of the one day, and then a few days later, the Bahamas team were spotted on different motorways and stopped by police that year ahead of the Commonwealth Games. So you're right.
Now, in that case, you've got to stress, haven't you, that it is undoubtedly an innocent and probably absolutely terrifying mistake. I actually ended up on
you can't make a U-turn, can you?
No, you can't. I ended up on a French auto route.
Did you?
Do you know whose fault it was? Matt Stevens.
Yeah.
It was when Matt was my team manager, and we were out for a training ride ahead of the Tour of Finisterre in Brittany. We were like, Matt, where are we going? I was just down here, lads. Matt, this is a this is a motorway. And he's like, oh, never mind, we'll come off at the next junction.
Most annoying was you all had to pay the payage. Yeah.
Anyway, right, back to the topic. The news is awash, isn't it, with stories inflaming the situation on our roads, for a few cheap clicks. That being one of them, I guess, actually. And it certainly doesn't take long to find an opinion piece talking about how to stop cyclists from misbehaving, why we're such a menace. And I do think, genuinely, that it's something that all of us cyclists, do need to take note of and kind of do our best to just be, like, nice, decent citizens, really. Although, we do know from previous experience, talking about subjects like this one, some of you disagree.
We do know that.
And we take your points on board too, right?
Always. Is it worth getting the police involved? That's the question. Well, we have some first-hand experience right here in the GCN office because one staff member, not a presenter, has been caught in a police sting operation.
That's right. They shall remain nameless, this person, shall they? However, they got busted riding through red lights and received an on-the-spot fine and a bit of a talking to, okay? What is interesting, though, is that it did change their behaviour afterwards as well.
Which makes sense. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
While police enforcement doesn't stop all motorists from breaking the law again, the thought of getting caught does act as some sort of deterrent to most people, I would
say. Yeah, absolutely. Interestingly, right, I disappeared down a rabbit hole looking at stuff on the internet with regards to this topic. I found that Toronto in Canada has a history of putting number plates on bikes. Yeah. I mean, we're going back a bit now, back to the 1930s until about the 1950s. But they've also revisited this topic time and again subsequently, and they found that licensing doesn't change the behaviour of cyclists who are disobeying the traffic laws, and that they think that other measures would be better.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting, yeah, absolutely interesting.
I'm glad it was so long ago. I thought I'd just, you know, completely forgotten or not even seen that license plates on bikes were a thing over in Canada in recent years.
I did tell you it was a rabbit hole I went down, is our level of professionalism here at GCN.
We found it.
Yeah.
So I found it, at least. Oh, yeah, yes, 100%. Imposing extra rules and regulations on cyclists, it would be very expensive, I would say.
Yeah.
Ineffective, probably.
Yeah.
And a dangerous policy as well. But I've got nothing against cyclists being reprimanded as it currently stands. I mean, why shouldn't we, as cyclists, pay some sort of price if we're riding dangerously and caught doing so?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it be nice to think that we wouldn't need to be done, right? Mm-hmm. If the police didn't have to waste any time on cyclists, and particularly if they're wasting time for what is effectively PR, isn't it, really? But so maybe in the meantime, if we could just all agree not to behave like knobheads, would just be nice.
I'm not sure I could agree to that.
Why not? It's just inbuilt, is it?
Yeah, genetic. That's what I tell myself.
Well, that's true. Knobheads will be knobheads, right?
I know what you mean, though. And as we said before, your mode of transport does not influence your behaviour, does it? You probably, like you said, if you're a knobhead, you're a knobhead. An idiot's an idiot, whether they're in a car or on a bike.
Yeah, but then maybe you get away with what you can get away with, right? And actually, like, we've said this before, a lot of cycling rule-breaking infringements feel at that point like they're not doing any harm. They're not endangering anyone. So even if by the letter of the law you're doing something, like, you're not actually being a knobhead, you're just breaking a law that doesn't make sense in that particular instance.
No.
Whereas in a car, that threat of being caught probably does modify that behaviour in normal people.
Very true. I feel like we've whittled on enough, though.
I think we probably have.
At a point where we should throw things out to the audience and ask what you guys think at home. Should the police use their precious resources to tackle rogue cyclists?
Rogue.
Even if it will have no demonstrable effect on road safety.
Yeah, and would it curb bad behaviour on the roads, do you think? Let us know in the comment section down below.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we will stick with our theme of road rules for just a moment longer, because a famous race for under 18 riders here in the UK made the national news for the first time ever this week.
Not because of the racing or because of the winner, but because of the new 20 mile per hour speed limits in urban areas in Wales, which meant that the race had to be rerouted. So the organisers obviously were frustrated about this, and anxious also to ensure that the race was able to go ahead at all. But a solution was thankfully found, albeit one that removed some key climbs on the race.
Yeah, now it's not the first time this year that the 20 mile an hour limit has frustrated cycling event organisers. Many time trialists have been excuse me, many time trialists have been complaining. That wasn't a very nice noise, was it? Have been complaining this year as well. Now, personally, while I can see why, it would be absolutely gutting to lose the ability to run races as we have been used to, I can't help but try and see it from a bigger picture. Mm. You know, 20 mile an hour speed limits are safer for cyclists. They're ultimately going to get more people on bikes more of the time. I'm sure we can adapt our races to suit. So hopefully it's not going to be a problem long term. And I think we should embrace those lower speed limits.
I've got a couple of thoughts on this.
Go on then.
Firstly, we could organise a vet tour of Wales. I mean, I could safely go through all of these urban areas.
That is true, yeah.
20 miles per hour. Also, no speed limits on gravel. So enough said, I think.
Yeah, that is very true. There are no speed limits on gravel. Well, self-imposed ones.
Should we mention the winner, even though that was not what I think we should, headlines? Yeah. Seb Grindley, well done. He took the overall win, by the way. So remember that name. He joins the likes of Tom Pidcock, Fred Wright, Eddie Dunbar and Dan Martin on the winner's roster.
Yeah. What I want to know is which rider finished 19th? Because they might one day become a GCN presenter.
Ah, you come 19th, have you?
Well, I think so. I can't actually remember because it was 20-something years ago and I don't think those results would be on the internet.
I came 10th.
Did you? Nice.
I think I was 9th or 10th. I know I pipped into the top 10 on the final day up the tumble.
Up the tumble, yeah.
Yeah, don't think I broke 20 miles per hour up there.
Nice. Anyway. Alex, what did Alex say? I don't think he cracked the top 10. But he was sixth at the tumble.
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
His best result came when he was a youth rider that got permission to ride the Junior Tour of Wales. It just got worse as he got to be actually a junior.
A talented rider,
With young talent for a moment, not Alex, but the person we were just talking about. Today, Pogacar might have some new competition, his new 18-year-old teammate, Pablo Torres. He just smoked the record at the Colle della Finestra, which is now 1 hour, 45 seconds. So that is 3 minutes faster than Froome went up it in the Giro d'Italia on that infamous stage, and faster even than Jose Rujano, who had the record.
Yeah, he did set in 2011 in the Giro d'Italia. That is a remarkable performance, isn't it? Mm. That climb, let it be known, is my favourite climb of all time. So the top section's on gravel, which is great. The gradient is a consistent 9% for 18 kilometres.
Mm. Yeah, it's not my favourite climb.
Yeah, but an hour 45.
Do you mean to watch?
No, to ride up. Well, I mean, it's mainly because the road is super narrow and it just twists the whole way up and there's like mega views out and then it becomes all exposed on gravel. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the top, you can go even higher on gravel if you're on a gravel bike.
Yeah. Well, how much higher?
I actually don't know. But it's a famous road. There's is it Second World War or like late 19th century military road that links together all these old forts at the top of the Alps. It's on my bucket list, yeah.
Not much 4G there, though, judging by the Tour de l'Avenir reception.
Is that right?
Coverage, yes. Don't forget, by the way, if you would like to watch a full season of bike racing, available both live and on demand, all you need to do is take out a subscription to Discovery Plus or Max. Anyway, speaking of talented young riders breaking through, or just talented riders maybe, we need to give a shout out to Sebastian Sprater, who finished 148th in the Swiss Epic Mountain Bike Stage Race.
Oh, I had a chuckle when I saw this on Pink Bike. It turns out that Valtteri Bottas is not the only Formula One driver who can turn his hand to bike riding, because Sebastian Sprater is actually Sebastian Vettel, who was racing under a fake name.
Not sure how talented he is. He got beaten by Blake and by Rich from GMBN by nearly 2 hours.
Yeah. And what are you saying about Blake and Rich not being talented?
No, I'm saying I'm not sure how talented Sebastian is.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, they were 128th.
Yeah, well, all right then. Not sure how talented they are either.
they were out of their comfort zone, we should say. Mm. It was like, it's a cross-country stage race, isn't it? Mm. And Blake is not renowned for his cross-country skills, even though clearly he has them.
Mm.
He probably just keeps them hidden most of the time.
He's strong, isn't he?
For his image.
Yeah. Next up, hack / bodge of the week. A reminder, you just need to go to upload.globalcyclingnetwork.com to get involved in this part of the show, which is exactly what Lizzie G has done. She says, glad I've been paying attention. Gear cable snapped on a long ride. Use skills and knowledge garnered from watching hack / bodge to get me the 6 miles to my nearest bike shop. Pulled the cable tight enough for a fairly easy gear and tied it to the steerer, which I protected with electrical tape and a piece of tyre, which I carry around in case I ride over glass again. Added a couple of tyre wraps for tension and then taped over them so there were no annoying ends sticking out.
Well, so much to say here, Dan. Firstly, that last bit, tie wraps, I take it that's a zip tie,
that
right?
Like
so
it.
Well done for protecting the ends with electrical tape, because as we know, those things are like sharper than like diamonds,
yes.
Aren't they, basically?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've cut the inside of my thighs multiple times on tie wraps. Also, well done for disguising zip ties with the use of tie wraps.
Yeah, yes. See what we did there. But no, in this case, they're fine because it is a temporary fix. Also, fair play for learning something for hack or bodge. Like,
or
I mean,
just from us.
Yeah, or just paying attention this far into a GCN show. I mean, that's amazing. So we should probably send Lizzie a water bottle or something for that level of, you know, whatever
attention.
It is. Yes, just commitment generally. But no, I think that's super cool. I mean, it's a hack, isn't it? It's a roadside hack.
It's a definite roadside hack, yes. I love the fact that you put tape over stuff just to get to the shop as well.
Yeah, there is.
Properly done.
If I can be that person, there is an even neater way of fixing a broken cable, isn't there? If you kind of, it involves like, actually, no, maybe you couldn't have done it on this one. I don't know. Anyway, but you can kind of like take the bit that goes in the shifter, can't you?
And the bulbous bit.
That's it. Stick it back through the derailleur. Put the derailleur in the right position, then crank it down. Whatever works, basically, on a roadside hack.
Lizzie obviously wasn't paying attention when we last mentioned that back in 2014. Yeah, hack from both of us.
Yeah, indeed. Right, next up, this one is from, I don't quite know how to pronounce this, Yen KBLA or Henk BLA, Henk Blah.
Jen K Blah.
Yeah, whatever.
We actually rehearsed this, didn't we? And we still come to no conclusion.
Well, I mean, it's, yeah. Unless it's an anagram, can't work it out. To put no too fine a point on it, a bent chainring tooth was successfully filed down in order to allow Jen to carry on a 3-day bikepacking trip in the mountains of Colorado. Apparently, the chain skipped a little bit, unless it was in a specific gear, so basically they avoided using the middle chainring. But I mean, it's a bit of a bodge, isn't it? But again, if you were able to do a 3-day bikepacking trip in spite of this potential
also, ride ender, would this not just help with quicker changes between chain rings at the front? Normally a filed down tooth does exactly that, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, I mean, there is that. I guess it just goes to show that Shimano don't just file down random teeth on their chain rings. It must actually be a specific one.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm... Again, it's got to be a hack, right? If it allows you to carry on doing what you're doing.
Definitely, hack from me as well.
Yeah.
Dan L. Hoven put Next Gen Isospeed, seen on the way back from the beach near Barcelona. And this is mightily scary. We've forgotten to describe things, haven't we, for the podcast listeners.
Oh, okay. All right, well, let's go for this
obviously,
one.
Obviously, the chain ring just had a tooth filed down. You can go on that one. This one
is... ruined the magic there, Dan.
This one... Well, it's an old school mountain bike frame where the seat post has obviously snapped or is just not long enough. And so it's kind of gaffer taped somehow. I don't know how they would have done this because there's no way that any amount of gaffer tape, and there is a lot wrapped around the top of the seat tube, chainstay and top tube and seat post, obviously. No amount of gaffer tape is going to keep that solid, is it? Solid
no.
enough for you to sit on that saddle.
Can I be a super nerd, Dan?
Yeah.
That is no ordinary random old mountain bike frame.
Is it a Yeti or something?
It's a Klein.
Is it?
I'm pretty sure from that paint job that is a Klein, which is like uber collector's item. So that bike, whilst it might look like an absolute heap of junk, I reckon if it was cleaned up, would be worth thousands.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's
some
on my
old school components on there as well.
It's on my wish list of things. Go and search for Klein. Is it Klein Attitude or Klein Altitude? One of the two.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. Sorry, just sort of tempted
to nerd. Quite sad. I've got a saved search on eBay, haven't I, for GT Zizang or whatever it is.
Shizang, yeah.
Shizang, is that how you
Shizang,
used to say
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
I sent it to Si a few months ago, didn't I? Mental price, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going bodge.
Yeah, I'm going massive bodge.
I think everyone would go bodge with that one. Finally, Mark Sena wrote in saying, cassette lock ring tool. I was thinking about buying a cassette lock ring tool, the lever arm type, until I had this idea that uses an old crank arm. Needed a bit of filing out, but relatively easy to make and much better than having to use a spanner slash ratchet.
I think that looks quite neat.
It does look neat, doesn't it?
I mean, I'm slightly scarred by homemade tools after your homemade chain whip that cost more than the park tool equivalent. But if it's a case of refashioning nice old bike parts, like an Ultegra crank arm, and making it into a cassette lock ring tool.
The crank arm doesn't look broken, though, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It's been filed out.
That's a good point.
I mean, I'm sure it must be broken because that is not going to be money-saving at all, is it? If you just use a perfectly good Shimano Ultegra crank arm.
That is true. I mean,
a tool.
Maybe Mark is a bit like Alex Payton and just has like a drawer full of like brand new, perfect, pristine Shimano crank arms. I mean, in Alex's case, it would of course be Durace.
Yes, exactly.
But still, this, I like it.
I wonder what sort of tools you could fashion out of Campagnola Super Record 11-speed cassettes, of which we have abundance.
Ninja Stars?
Yeah.
I reckon
a lot of them.
Yeah, well, you'd have 11, wouldn't you?
Well, are they all separate? Is there not a block at the start?
Good point. Yeah, maybe there's a couple of blocks. All right.
Anyway, we could still make at least 100 between us, couldn't we? anyway, back to Mark's. I'm going to go hack, actually.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go hack as well. I think that's really nice.
No, good.
Going back to our Ninja Stars. We've just been having a conversation about our axe throwing abilities.
Yeah.
And turns out that both of us would be crap at Ninja Stars, wouldn't we, basically?
Yeah.
If it was anything like axe throwing.
But, well, except with a bit of practice.
You reckon?
That's a bit like what we did with pro cycling. We could become distinctly mediocre.
Yeah, no natural talent, but enough dedication and you can get somewhere in the end. Yes. Thank you very much for those hacks and bodges this week. As Dan mentioned, keep them coming in. You can hit the uploader up. There's a link in the description, by the way, if you don't want to go to upload.globalcyclingnetwork.com. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. Notice this one's got something in it, which is great.
Yes, that was champagne from Manon's leaving do.
Was it?
Apparently.
Whoa, that was champagne. Yeah. It's now vinegar.
Well, Hank was trying to make me smell it last week. I was like, no, I don't want to smell it. He's like, go on, smell it. I said, no, I don't want to. It was actually all right. It was slightly more pungent champagne than normal.
Yeah, it's champagne vinegar. It's a delicacy, isn't it? We digressed slightly. This is the part of the GCN show where you have to put a witty caption to a photograph that we will give you in just a minute. But results first, as always. What was last week's photo, Dan?
It was this one of Kasia Nuvidoma on the start line of a stage of the Tour de France Femme Avec Zwift, with one hand over her earpiece and one down on her microphone. The winner this week is 01 Fozzy S, who put caption competition. Hi, Taylor, honey. I'll be home in a second after I've put away this Peloton.
Nice. I mean, it's a simple one, isn't it? Taylor being Cash's husband, we should probably clarify.
Are they married, are they? Partner, at least, anyway.
I don't know, actually. I just... Yeah, I've no idea. Maybe we should quickly Google. But yeah, there you go. We will send you your Camelback water bottle. Just get in touch with us.
And if you'd like a little bit of champagne put in the bottom of it, ahead of it being sent, just let us know.
It definitely wasn't champagne. I think it was like sparkling, some kind
Carver.
Of basic sparkling. Well, I like a Carver. Very, very much like a Carver. Right, what's the photo for this week?
This week's comes from the Vuelta a España, which has been particularly hot, as we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, roasty.
Mike Woods of Israel Premier Tech. So he saw 49 degrees centigrade on his bike computer one point at one stage, which sounds ridiculous. And yet the extreme weather protocol was not implemented.
Where's Adam Hansen?
Go figure.
Is he on holiday?
Anyway, so that is what is related to this week's photo, which is the Vuelta a España peloton going up a short climb with a large amount of water coming from a fire hydrant on the side of the road, which must have felt like a blessing for them.
Nice, wasn't it?
Si's going to get you started this week. Go ahead, Si.
Oh, God. Straight back from holiday. That's some pressure. Okay. The peloton at the Vuelta has been so hot that one rider unfortunately blew a gasket. There you go. Instead of a fire hydrant, I'm imagining that's a cyclist, by the way.
Well, it could well have been.
Yeah, there you go. Either that or it's like a tubeless tyre blowing up, isn't it?
Yes. Right, get involved in the comments below with your best captions. We'll pick a winner next week and we'll send you a GSM Camelback water bottle. Incidentally, there is the special Spanish edition GSM Camelback water bottle available over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com, which is also where you're going to find the t-shirts that Si and I are sporting today, as well as a heap of other designs. And that one that you're wearing has been particularly popular.
El Toro.
Yeah, I was wearing the hoodie version for the Race and News show.
Ah.
Came out a day late this week because it's a bank holiday weekend.
Nice. Sierra Nevada, that's a climb for your bucket list, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the only time I've ever been there was for the Mountain Bike Worlds in 2000. Maybe 2000, was it?
It was. How'd you go on?
I punctured. I think it was genuinely the only time I ever punctured in a mountain bike race.
No.
I was doing really, really badly. So it was almost a blessing in disguise.
Okay, well, that's all right. Yeah, maybe you're just secretly self-sabotaging. Let there be a rock, a really pointy rock.
There's one. No, it was generally bad luck. We will shortly let you know what's coming up on the channel over the next few days. But first up, a few comments from last week. Starting as ever with a couple from underneath last week's show, where we were asking whether the cycling was in fact better 10 years ago than it is now, although we came up with more reasons why it wasn't. But anyway, Yona7100 or JohnE7100, but it was a hell of a lot better 10 years ago. I was only 67. You're coming from there, John.
I did have a chuckle when I read that, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're in a similar boat there, aren't you? Cycling was better 10 years ago.
Definitely.
Because you were...
Well, we did say on last week's show, like, unless you're sub 30, you were probably quicker 10 years ago.
Yeah, quite likely to. Yeah. Jed Rooney said Dan's haircut has improved dramatically in 10 years. That's for certain.
That was based on actually probably a haircut that was 12 years ago. We showed me fixing some disc brakes on a very old mountain bike from 2012.
Was that the mod years?
I don't know what it was, to be honest. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. I think the mod years were a bit before that.
I think they were. They were Cervelo test team days.
That's right, yeah.
Di Carbine wrote, GCN will talk about 5 reasons why cycling was better 10 years ago, proceeds to only give 4 reasons. Yes, I did notice this when I was watching the low resolution edits of the show last week. Firstly, I thought that the editor... Firstly, I blame the editor. Like, you've missed one bit out. And then I realised that in what I'd written, I'd skipped from 3 to 5.
Well, what's good to know is that nothing has changed on GCM in 10 years. That's definitely something that we would always do. Anyway, under How Fast with Tour de France Fam, Rick Moore said, now we know how Alex stays so fast, trying to keep up with Chloe, who actually smoked it.
She shouldn't she? I don't think Alex can actually keep up with Chloe when she goes for it on a climb anymore.
No, he can't.
Particularly given that Alex's heyday on climbs was when he was 16 at the Junior Tour of Wales before he was junior.
Exactly, yeah. Before he went through puberty, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
And then 5 pro tips to help you hold the wheel. Burgle said, make sure you have a really loud free hub so the rider in front of you knows how little work you're doing. Good idea, isn't
it? I did... I was telling you a story that at the end of our ride that you didn't see because we went our separate ways to go back to where we were both residing.
Yes.
And somebody came past me and had a quick chat and they said, I'm trying to average 18 miles per hour, which made me feel worse than I already did because if he needed to press on to average 18, obviously I wasn't even doing that. Anyway, I sat behind him and on the descents, I thought, I'm going to sort of keep pedaling even though there's no pressure on the free hub. Just so that they don't have that annoying sound of the person behind doing nothing at all. So I better pretend like I am still pedalling.
Did you ask for permission to sit on?
Well, after he said I'm trying to average 18, I said, well, you go ahead. I'll just sit on the wheel if that's all right.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So you didn't even ask the question. You just said, I will sit on the wheel. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, because I was local and he wasn't, we came around this one corner that he took so badly, I ended up on the front. And then I thought... All I need to do is go under 18 miles an hour, right? And it'll come back through again. So that's what I did. Because he did sort of leave me there for a bit because we were doing over 18.
Yeah.
And I thought, I know what to do here.
I bet he was there going like, it'd be really rude if I overtake Dan Lloyd this quickly. But, I mean, he's ruining my ride here. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, an awkward situation.
Anyway. But let you know what's coming up on the channel this week. Starting, we were supposed to keep this one short, weren't we?
Yeah,
we were filming this on a Tuesday morning. It's supposed to be coming out Tuesday afternoon. On Wednesday, 5 skills to make you safer on the bike. On Thursday, how to choose a tent.
Yeah. Connor tells you, and not just a tent, I believe. It's basically what you should take, whether it's bivy bag, tent, tarp, hammock, all those, basically how to sleep when you're bikepacking.
I'll just take a key for the house.
Right. That's tickled me. And then on Friday, I assume you talked about this last week.
We did.
Yeah, we couldn't put it out, unfortunately. But the world's strongest bike riders are not in the Tour de France. So inside the amazing world of the America's Cup. It blew my mind. It's now my second favourite sport on the planet.
Wow. Mm. Behind?
Cycling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Checking.
Yeah. And then on Saturday, gravel versus mountain bike, which is harder? So me and Alex went out to do a few tests, basically, try and make those mountain bikers shut up once and for all. Prove that gravel riding is not only better, but also harder.
Well, I hope you manage it. Yeah. They're annoying, aren't they?
Yeah. And then Sunday, so we did a GCN show about this not so long ago, the miracle training that is heat training. So Connor has been literally sweating buckets for this one. Find out the results. Is it actually an easy win miracle performance boost?
I did catch Connor in the act of heat training last week. It didn't look very nice.
No.
Not for him, not for me either.
No, so it might be short, but whether or not it's easy is going to be a subject for debate. But what I don't know is whether or not he gets a 5% boost on his FTP.
Well, can you imagine how the rides of the Vuelta a España are going to be 2 weeks after the Vuelta finishes? I mean, that's heat training and a half.
It is, yeah. They'll probably all be like shriveled prunes as well by the end of it.
Very light.
Yes.
Very powerful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, what if Connor combines that with beetroot juice and then the creatine that he's going to do a video on soon, he's going to be back in the pro peloton.
Well, beetroot didn't work, did it, I don't think.
Oh, did it not?
No, bicarb works.
Oh, yeah, that was the one.
So it was bicarb, well, potentially heat training, find out. There's a lot of little marginal gains, aren't there?
Yes, there are indeed. Right, we should probably end it there, Si.
Probably should,
This video is to come out on Tuesday, the 27th of September.
2025.